help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. Come, let us worship together. Let us open our minds to the challenge of reason. Open our hearts to the healing of love. Open our lives to the calling of conscience. Open our souls to the comfort of joy. Astonished by the miracle of life, grateful for the gift of fellowship, confident in the power of living faith, we are here gathered. Come, let us worship together. We come now to this house of worship. Spirit calls to spirit, hand reaches to hand, heart joins with heart. Voice lifts with a voice of song and praise. Come, let us worship together. Let's begin with, please join me in singing hymn 188 to open. Come, come, whoever you are, and join us standing as you are able. This is a free church. Whether you are a theist or humanist, Christian, pagan, or nature mystic, whether you are gay, straight, transgender, or bisexual, whether you are disabled or temporarily abled, whether you are young or old or in between, we are so glad you are with us today. You make our circle complete. Please feel free to join us after the service for coffee and conversation, especially if you're here for the first time, we welcome you. Couple announcements. We have children's religious education classes first, second, and third Sundays of every month, and that will be meeting in the back room here right after the service. If you have children or just love to be with children, please feel free to join us for children's religious education. Nancy will also be hosting her class every second Sunday, exploring the Unitarian Universalist principles. And please join us next week for when we will be making Valentines during our annual Valentine's sing-along for the service. If you are proud of this church, become its advocate. If you are concerned for its future, share its message. If its values resonate deep within you, give it a measure of your devotion. This church cannot survive without your faith, your confidence, your enthusiasm. Its destiny, the larger hope, rests in your hands. An offering will be gratefully received for the work of our fellowship. Thank you. this fellowship is a community of caring. This is our time in our service when you are invited to share a personal joy or sorrow with those gathered here. If you wish to share today, please come forward, speak your name into the microphone, and drop a pebble in the water and briefly share with us now.
Hi, I'm Jim, and I found out just yesterday that my dear friend Blanca Eckstein passed away. She was a vivacious wit, although she had spent the previous 23 years confined to her apartment, unable to leave, probably due to the fact that she had hidden from the Nazis and was the only survivor in her family. She was a fairly renowned sociologist and sexologist, part of the New York sexual liberation scene in the 1960s, but then just sort of lost her ability to show up in public. But she was an extremely sweet person, very humble, and very funny. And she's gone.
I have to pick up two stones, a dark one for a sorrow and a clear one for a joy. My name's Nancy Miller. I had a friend at the Evergreen Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Annie Tarpley, who has now left this worldly place, and that was quite a shock because she's quite young. She showed me that with bravery, most things are accomplishable, and I'll be forever in her debt for that. And my joy is my brother-in-law, that I call my brother in my heart, had cancer. None of the physicians anywhere on this side of the Mason-Dixon would do his surgery. And so he had to go to the Mayo Clinic. And the Mayo Clinic said, we have one surgeon, but with five other surgeons, he will attempt this surgery. After 21 hours in the operating room, my brother is cancer-free.
I'm Laura. Thursday, Rosemary fell and fractured her left tibia. And initially, apparently, a fair amount of pain. From what I understand, medically, they've got her in a kind of a brace that immobilizes the knee and so forth. I think she sees an orthopedic doctor on Thursday. I spoke with her last night, and she's in pretty good spirits. She lays still. She says she's not having much pain now, but if she puts her foot down on the floor, that is painful. But she's doing well. She's staying with a neighbor, and they're taking really good care of her, and another neighbor is taking care of her dogs. So the best way to reach her is text message to her cell phone or a phone call to that. If you call her home phone, she won't be answering. But she asked me to report on how well the service went to her after the service today, so she's in good spirits.
I have a card for us to sign. Yeah.
Sure. Jorge?
Hi, my name is Jorge, and I want to drop a pebble of joy and hope for the Venezuelan people that are in their last stage of liberation from this tyranny of Mr. Maduro. Nicolas Maduro, who's really scary guy.
I'm Norma Jean Young, and I come with a joy of joining you. New to this family of spirit of life, and I come bringing some new opportunities also. Last month, I had two events right here in this room, beautifully held. One was a grandmother's circle, and I am inviting anyone of feminine preference, gender, to attend. The 22nd, we'll do another one right here. And then the next 2 days will be a healing course. You know, my way of serving has been through Reiki healing for 33 years. So it's just a joy to bring it here. And thank you for welcoming me and my music.
And one final pebble for those joys and concerns that we hold in our hearts but leave unspoken today. Next in our service, we have hymn 325, Love Makes a Bridge. Please stand in spirit and in body or spirit and join us. It is now my joy to welcome Barbara Gilday for her message about longing for home.
Good morning, you brave, hearty souls. It was really fun driving down from Bellingham. My friend fled to Pakistan when the radio said that the Russians were coming. She hated the radio because it always brought bad news. And they lived in Pakistan for some years. And then when it was safe to go back, they went back to Afghanistan, where again she lived for some years and married and had two children. She came to this country and she came with her two young children. Her husband was to follow. That was 8 years ago. And the children have not seen their father for 8 years because he had his visa in hand, he'd been vetted completely, he had his ticket, and then Trump issued his edict of no refugees and immigrants from that country. So there he sits in Afghanistan. In this extraordinary period of history, we find people in Asia, Africa, Central and South America displaced and traveling as refugees and immigrants, looking for home. Looking back on the long history of colonialism, one can see patterns of, at best, patronizing behavior, and at worst, open raping of resources, both material and human. And to that, the effect, or to add to that, the effect of climate change and resultant food shortages, and we can see the worldwide disaster unraveling before our eyes. I want to go back and start with the most heinous of movements of people, and that is the beginning of slavery. It was 400 years ago this year that slavery began from Ghana. The government of Ghana, led by President Nana Akufo-Addo, has invited African Americans of slave heritage to return to Africa, and in particular to Ghana. He says that he honors their contributions to this country and admires their resilience. Some African Americans consider returning to Africa, going home. Some have chosen to retire there. But others acknowledge that although their roots are in Africa, their home now is in the U.S., even if they don't have agency, complete agency in this country. Still, many are committed to creating the changes that will make it one land for all. I wonder about those people who want to go back to Africa, even if just to visit. Will they have the same urge that I did when I went to Ireland, which is half of my heritage? I had this physical, visceral sense that I wanted to get down and kiss the ground. And I just imagine maybe some of them will have that too. But I acknowledge that although it was joyful traveling in Ireland, I loved Ireland, I'd love to go back. Be a totally different thing if I tried to live in Ireland again, because my culture and my history are different now than the Irish people, even though my origins four generations ago were there. There are those in this country who still feel the anger of that original sin of slavery. Take Dee, for example, an African American who lives in Seattle, who's a custodian at Seattle U, or was 4 years ago when I met her. Upon meeting my Nigerian friend Judy, who is here learning compassionate listening, she said to her, "It was your people who sold my people into slavery." And she was just, horribly angry for 10 minutes like that. She talked to Judy. And yet, I sense that Dee has not found her home here and certainly would not want to go back to Africa because she looks at those people as her betrayers. On the other hand, there are those who've been fortunate enough to attain a good education here and rise socially and economically to attain the American dream, although the shadow chains of racism are still upon all of color. In Nigeria some years ago, at a slave deportation site, I agreed to put on the chains that long ago had been put on the slaves who were walking to the ships. And immediately, it felt like a wet blanket was descending upon me. It was a horrible sense of hopelessness and fear and dread. Something akin to what I imagine those people felt those many years ago. We walked along the path that had a sign, the path of no return, that led down to the water. We saw the cauldron that held water laced with herbs that would drug people so that they would go mindlessly to the ship and be put in chains before they would come out of their stupor. And later in Cape Coast, in the Cape Coast Slave Castle, which still exists, we stood in the dark, dank, cavernous pit, huge room with a high ceiling, and one small window from the top, putting light into it. There was a door that said, "The Door of No Return." And there, slaves often waited for 2 or more weeks for the next boat to come to take them to what horrible unknown future. They had no idea. These people had often been captured by other tribes in wars and sold to the white people. It was easier to capture slaves and sell them to make money than it was to dig and mine for the gold there. And so this horrible history of slavery began. And yet, when President Nana Akufo-Addo welcomed the slaves or former slaves to return, I heard no remorse, no apology in his invitation. And I felt very sad about that. So what is it that people would be going home to? Yes, there to be that exhilaration, touching the soil of their origins, melting into the blackness of their brothers and sisters, taking part in regional celebrations, feeling the joy of dancing and lively music and dramatic church services that have all of that in their services. But beware the trap of romantic expectations. There's a dark side to Ghana, as there is to every country. In Ghana, transportation is a pain in the neck. Toilets are variable and often pretty trying. Bribery is common. When you're traveling on a trotro to the next town, you may be stopped in the town and have to give a bribe to the police to be able to go on to the next town. It's quite annoying. And the slow pace of government, and these are just a few of the irritants. But the more insidious things that one would encounter are similar to what my Nigerian friend Judy encountered. In this country, the resentment, the guilt, and the wariness. My friend James from Axim in Ghana says that Ghanaians have a pretty strong distrust of African Americans. They're tired of how sorry they feel for themselves. And their observation is that they have come from America. They have free education, financial advantages, and therefore easy lives. Like many of us, James and some of his friends paint everybody with the same brush. The truth is, for those who go seeking their roots, their home, there will be deep emotions coming from seeing the place where extreme emotional and physical pain was inflicted on their ancestors. It may be a place for healing for some, and it may be a place that brings up, opens up wounds that may never heal for others. There are many factors that will determine what their experience is like, much of which is that they must do their own homework, both the emotional homework and the historical homework, to be able to cope with the potent feelings, dispel the romantic notions, and be able to be realistic in their approach to their visit. Africans who live there will expect those who choose to move to Ghana and other African countries to come bringing their resources to help the motherland, but not to dictate what is right or wrong. Many of them have observed that we and African Americans, being part of the we, like to take over and tell them what to do. And what they want is for us to put together our joint wisdom to learn a better way to go into the future. Home can be elusive. Is it here where we live now? Is it where we come from? Or is it where we aspire to be in the future? The issue of migration is often associated with poverty, but other factors also drive the phenomenon, including youth unemployment, climate change causing desertification, population growth, violence, racial discrimination, and urbanization, amongst others. Conflict in the Central African Republic, for example, has left an estimated 2.5 million people relying on humanitarian assistance, and 690,000 people internally displaced. Migrants fleeing violence have spilled across the borders of neighboring countries, particularly Cameroon, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Chad, and the Republic of Congo, just as it is south of our own border. In view of this growing crisis, a well-managed, orderly migration framework that incorporates practical, humane, and rights-based operational solutions is needed. Strengthening mobility schemes in the region will foster regular and circular migration, allowing people in African countries, as well as with our seasonal farm workers here, to work abroad legally, return home safely, and participate in the development of their own communities. Stakeholders in these countries will have to take coordinated action, something that's happening in some places and obviously not in others. They want to address issues such as threats to public health, despoiling of natural resources, the loss of critical years of education, enculturation, and job training. In Whatcom and Skagit counties, we have the C2C organization, Community to Community, comprised of farm workers and their allies who work for better living conditions and pay, such as they did in the last couple of years with Sukuma Farms. To ensure the safety of vulnerable populations along migratory routes who lack legal options to migrate or return home, the International Organization for Migration, together with African member states and European Union, launched in December 2016 the Joint Initiative on Migrant Protection and Reintegration to aid almost 40,000 people stranded. This would be a good model for those coming to our southern borders. The reality of the migration issue in Europe came home to me last fall when I traveled to France. I stayed for a week in Paris with a wonderful Vietnamese doctor who was second generation French, named Marie Aude Kong. Marie began her professional career as a dermatologist, but as more and more migrants and refugees came into the country, and especially to Paris, she found that an increasing percentage of her patients suffered from HIV/AIDS. So now most of her work is with these migrants and with AIDS. And she finds that a huge percentage of her time is spent on social work. A large number of these migrants come from war-torn countries and areas of famine in North Africa. For years now, European countries have been inundated with African refugees. And not surprisingly, many of them head towards the countries who were their colonial masters because they speak the language. So that seems like the path of least resistance, such as the case in Paris, where city services are overwhelmed with people from Africa, who, although they know the language because of their ties through the French colonial period, often lack the education and cultural awareness to easily find their places in society. The city has not been very proactive with programs and processes, and there are storm clouds gathering. I reflected on the ways the colonials stole from the countries that they took over, and I find it ironic that now the fruits of their greed have come home to roost. Marie talked about her frustrations about women whom she often sees who are pregnant. They have AIDS, and they probably have other children, and they have no means of support. They may even be living on the streets, which makes treating them extremely difficult and intermittent. If they were in their own villages in Africa, they know that their families would support them during times of need. But they either have no families in Paris, or if they do, those people are so strapped for income that they can't afford to support their relatives. Marie sees a huge crisis looming as the children of this generation grow up either outside the education system or not properly tended by their parents in the education system. They don't know they have to look after homework. They don't know they have to ask questions of the teachers. And on the other hand, I met some Africans who were fitting in very well, or appeared to be. I was lost one night, my last night in Paris. I was trying to find a Starbucks to get a Starbucks mug for a friend who drove me to the airport. That was her request. And I got off the bus at the right time, and I walked in what I thought was the right direction. I even stopped and checked with someone in my not very good French. And I walked and walked and walked and walked, and I hit the Seine River. And I knew I was lost, but I had no idea where I was in relationship to where I needed to go. It was too late then. The Starbucks was closed. But I saw this nice-looking African man, and I stopped him and, in French, asked him if he could help me figure out where I was, because my phone had died. And he not only figured out where I was and where I was living, but he drove me there. It was very kind of him. And he was working in the financial district. He'd had a good education. And I met another man who was a taxi driver. He was a second-generation Parisian. He had two sons. One of them had graduated from medical school and was doing research. He was 25. And the other one was in medical school. So this family, too, was integrating well into the community. But for each one of these that's coming, there are so many who are coming that don't have the resources to fit in. Which brings me back to the U.S. What is our history, and where do we stand on refugees and immigrants today? Traditionally, refugees have come to the U.S. fleeing oppression and persecution, as did the early settlers, so that they could practice their own religion. Then there were immigrants like the Irish, who came because of the famine, caused in large part because the colonial English took over large tracts of land and just left them small plots where they planted their potatoes, which were not very resistant to the blight, which ended up causing the potato famine. For these, for the Germans and the Italians and many other waves of immigrants, the U.S. was a land of opportunity and freedom, and they brought to it their energy to make good, contributing to our economic growth, in spite of the fact that they were not always very welcomed. For example, the Irish were not very welcomed. Arrival limits were first employed against Asians in the late 19th century and the early 20th century. A shameful episode in our history occurred with the refusal to accept Jews in the 1930s during a period of tightening due to religious, ethnic, and racial intolerance. After the war in 1939, President Truman opened the borders to displaced persons from Europe, saying, "Common decency and the fundamental comradeship of all human beings require it." While there were bumps along the way, in 1948, Congress passed the Displaced Person Act, permitting some 200,000 immigrants to enter the U.S. In 1950, it reached nearly 250,000. And that number has fluctuated broadly in the intervening years. By 2016, the U.S. was accepting about 70,000 refugees and were projecting 100,000 the next year. But when Trump came into power, the administration lowered it to 45,000, and in the following year, in 2018, to 30,000, in spite of the global refugee crisis, which so many other countries are bearing the burden for. I think we have a real moral and ethical issue in our country. Although we may differ on how to respond to the current refugee and immigrant needs, I think we would all agree that suitable screening is appropriate. But in today's world of climate change, food and job shortages, the long-term effects of colonialism in many parts of the world, and the consequent migratory shifts, It behooves us to adjust to the challenges of immigrants and refugees with programs that support them for appropriate settlement with government, religious, and private organizations. Improved processes at the borders, more judges, and proactive planning will make for grateful citizens who will work hard to show their worthiness and fit into their new communities. To be able to send money home to help struggling relatives and stabilize those parts of the world. I believe that the collective soul of our nation is ailing as families are separated at the borders, children are kept in cage-like enclosures, and others are forced to wait in overcrowded facilities. People who have already emigrated, like my Afghani friend and her two sons, are unable to unite with their families. And as she talks to her husband on the phone 8 years down the line, she's becoming acclimatized to this culture. He is not. He makes demands of her of what the children may or may not do, which are not in keeping with what they may or may not do here in this country. And I can see her and her husband growing farther and farther apart. If we accept foreigners with grace, they will give us back many times what we have given them. And if we reject them and respond with fear and resistance, we will engender fear and anger, which will only give rise to social problems. We are a country of immigrants ourselves, who've learned in our diversity to help one another and be supportive in community, to create a nation that welcomes and supports the newcomer. This welcome has ebbed in this generation, and I believe it is our task to find ways to make it flow again, such as the country that I envision as home. Amen, and blessed be. And let's take a moment to just be in meditation. Close your eyes if you wish. Thinking about home. Thinking about not having a home. What it must be like to live in a refugee camp for 20 years and not know if you'll ever escape it. Think how you would be there. Longing for home, leaving war-ravaged, dangerous environments to come to a place that you hope will be safe. Imagine being a woman with two small children traveling on a long road, uncertain of where you will eat next, who might accost you. Will you ever get there? What would that be like? Imagine being at the southern border. Imagine seeing the state's soil and not being able to get there and not knowing if you ever will, in spite of what you've come through to get to this point. How would you feel?
imagine being a border guard. It's your job to take that child from its parents' arms. It's your job to say no and send someone away. It's your job to break hearts. What does that do to your soul? Imagine an orderly system where there are stopping points where people can have safe haven along the way, where there is food and water, where there is organized, rational response at the border and timely processing. And imagine that you've been able to get through that system and get to the relative that you know in Los Angeles or Boston or Mount Vernon, wherever they may be. Imagine your joy and your gratitude and your relief and your desire to be everything that you and your children can be in this country. And now we have another hymn. 300? Okay, Annalise will take over.
Thank you, Barbara. Please join in hymn 300 with heart and mind, and please stand if you're able. Thank you.
Our closing words come from Dorothy Day. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Please join in a circle as we sing our circle song. The words are up here on the wall.